This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Fletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna and Jude Feld welcoming everybody tuning in to the show trainers listen to, and everyone who is tuning in throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206 and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Getting ready for another exciting program here tonight, and last week we had the chance to talk to Bill Mott's assistant and son, that is Riley Mott, who is an up-and-coming young trainer in the business. Tonight, we're going to visit with another rising star, so to speak. He has had the chance to work around names like Bobby Frankel and Jerry Hollendorfer, and now he is going to tell you his story on the program here this evening. And JT, first of all, happy to have you on board, my friend, as always. And as a former trainer, I know that these are some of the shows that you really look forward to when we get a chance to talk to the assistant trainers in the sport of thoroughbred racing.
Yeah, well, everybody knows the trainers. And, of course, in today's day and age, trainers are far flung. They have several different operations. But I think the assistant trainer shows are the most interesting. You get an insight into the trainers that they work for, and also most of these guys have some fantastic stories to tell.
How would you like to have learned from guys like Bobby Frankel and from Jerry Hollendorfer on a daily basis when you were coming up?
Yeah, well, that's the benefit if you can do that. I didn't ever work for Bobby, but one of the great things that happened to me was Bobby became a friend of mine, and he let me go with his assistant Umberto Ascanio horse to horse to horse, 40 horses at Hollywood Park. Every morning Umberto would say, this is a horse that has a knee problem, we're going to do this. This horse grabbed his quarter working out this morning, we're going to do this. And so it was like going to college for me. It was so great because I was working for Julio Canani. He had 3 horses.
Yep.
So I didn't get to see a lot working for Julio, but we were stable next to Bobby, and we would go horse to horse every morning. Umberto would take me and teach me, and that's how I learned how to take care of horses.
Well, Danny Ward Jr. has learned how to take care of horses, and some really good horses too. As we mentioned, he has worked with Hall of Famers Bobby Frankel, Jerry Hollendorfer, and he's been around this game for quite some time. And Danny is with us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Danny, appreciate the time.
Oh, glad to be with you. I remember that, and when Jude came around in Barn 2 over there at Hollywood Park, there's a Home Depot there now, but we were over in Barn 2 and with Julio, and yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday. It was only about 35 years ago.
Yeah, we've known one another a long time.
Long time, yeah.
A lot of horses and a lot of water under the bridge, but
a lot of experience that's priceless, you know. So,
well, Danny, what's it like to learn from guys like Bobby Frankel and Jerry Hollendorfer?
Well, you're gonna learn every day. You know, with each horse, you're gonna learn things, and once you see how to find the problems and how to fix them, you know, those things you're gonna keep with you for the rest of your life. So now we have a good program that we get all of our horses out in the morning, and we go over them and we jog them up and down the road, and we try to find little things and then adjust our schedule accordingly. Like if we see a little problem with a foot or this leg is a little filled today, let's work on it. Let's not work them today. So we try to stay ahead of that. You're going to have your injuries, no question, but that helps a lot. You know, we see little things and say, let's not work this horse today. Let's work on him and get him sound. I mean, I don't think you can just go to the barn and then bring the horses out and work them. I think a good idea is to get them out and jog them and, you know, you don't want the riders coming, bringing a horse out to the track and bringing them back saying they don't feel good. You want to find that out for yourself.
Yeah, it's so important. And Bobby was one of the first guys to do that, I think, at least in California, jog the horses up and down the path in the morning, take a look at them, see what was going on. And now it's become pretty much the norm.
Yeah, he was very good at it. He also told me that we had a place there at Hollywood where we could jog the horses sort of like an uphill, and that's when you can really see. And you can really see horses. So we would even, if we were going to go look at horses in the paddock at Hollywood, I believe that the old paddock, they had a little hill there where they came out on the track. You can really see if you got any problems there. That's for sure.
By the way, I don't know if I made it clear in the beginning of the program, but Danny is now working with Jerry Hollendorfer. Danny, did you go right from Bobby Frankel to Jerry?
No, I took a little time away from the track. I worked at a sports bar, and like they say, you know, just when you think you're out, they pull you back in, you know. I thought I wanted to try something different, but I came back to what I like best. So.
What brought you back?
You know, you miss the competition, and anything else that you do, you're not going to have that competition of going over and, bringing a horse over and winning a race, and also the satisfaction of working with the horses from when they're 2-year-olds and developing them. And there's a lot of satisfaction in that, and you don't find that satisfaction outside the track. Although, the work ethic that you learn, you know, if you start your first jobs at the racetrack, the work ethic really helps in the outside world, because you really have to work hard at the track with no time off and everything. But there isn't as much satisfaction. Not for me anymore.
Talk about your start and when you first came to the racetrack and how that all worked for you.
Well, I was a big fan of Bobby's, you know, growing up and following the races and everything, but I couldn't get a job with him right away. I worked for a trainer named Joe Manzi, and I worked in the summer at Del Mar, 1976, and there was a guy working with us then. And later on, he went to work for Bobby. I said, can you get me in over there? I was just going from like hot walker to groom with Manzi, and he says, "Yeah, we got a spot over here. We'll start you." But it was a lot more work with Bobby's barn. I wasn't ready. And Bobby and Umberto said, "Well, we're going to keep you, but you're not ready, you know, for our barn." And they started me out, you know, walking horses, and then I got one, and then I got two, and then eventually I got four. But they treated me really good. Umberto's a very good friend. And they were like family, so they brought me up.
You know, Danny, you talk about not being ready to make that move to Bobby Frankel's barn. What was it that you weren't ready for? What were they looking for?
I think they do a lot more work on the horses, you know, than other barns. You could see it, you know, a lot more straw, a lot more time spent with the horses, and you know, four bandages as opposed to two. In other barns, you can just walk around and see the barns, and you can tell that they don't really do as much work, you know, and icing all the horses. And you just have to manage your time. You know, when I first started, it took me all day to get finished. But you gotta learn how to, you know, get your horses out and get your stalls done early. And, you know, it wasn't that easy when I started, but I had to work my way out. I just wasn't ready. But they were patient with me. By that first meet there at Hollywood Park in 77, I was good to go.
You know, Bobby's style was a lot different than many barns, especially barns that are the way they're run today. There was always a set list and all that. Bobby was more like fly by the seat of his pants.
Oh,
he might
yeah.
come up with an idea. Talk about that as a groom, and what an aggravation that could have been.
Well, I mean, they just come and bring you saddle. They could bring you, you know, you have four horses, and they could just come bring you two or three saddles right away. You know, he wanted the horses, the ones that he wanted to see, you know, when he wanted to see them. There was no set list, you know. So, and then sometimes you'd be waiting all day, and then not get any horses out. So, you get used to it, you know. get used to it.
Yeah, you'd hear the grooms cussing and swearing, you know, that there'd be three saddles sitting there, and it got to get all three out at once. And then it's not just getting them out. Then you got to do the stalls, and then they come back, and they're getting baths, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole
thing.
But one good thing about Bobby's Barn, everybody pitched in because everybody knew the ups and downs of it. So if you know, one of the other grooms would help out if they saw a guy was in trouble, because another day it was going to be them. They knew that.
it was a good group, and everybody was together for a long time, and the turnover of horses is what really helps in learning, because we were claiming horses at that time, and you see them come and go, and you see different problems, and you figure out how to fix them. And those things, you know, you still use today. So it's very helpful.
Danny, what made Bobby Frankel so good?
Well, he first of all, he was a great handicapper when he first started. And then he became a horseman. So there are two different types of trainers. There's trainers that are really good with their horses and their soundness and everything, and then they don't know where to place them. And then there are trainers that are really good at reading the form and knowing where to place the horse, but they can't tell if there's a problem with their horse. But Bobby did both. He could do both. He not only could handicap, and then he became a top horseman too. So he could really look at a horse and tell you what was wrong and where. And he always was a handicapper. So he had that going in, and then he got to be a great horseman too.
Yeah, he had such a great knack of seeing a horse and knowing instantaneously what was wrong with it. You know, that was amazing. I mean, the first horse that I ever owned, we were taking her to the track, and he saw something he didn't like, and he called me over. He didn't make a big deal out of it. He called me over, and he goes, "Did you look at that filly's tendon this morning?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, it's got a vein that runs over it. It looks funky sometimes. And he goes, "Okay." I said, "Do you want to see it? You know, you can come over and look at her." No. I just wanted to make sure that you saw it, he said. He was taking care of me. And you know, I mean, that's the kind of guy he was. He would just like out of the corner of his eye, he'd see something, which was really amazing.
And especially jogging, he could tell you which leg and pretty much, you know, whether it's the foot or the knee, jogs like a knee or jogs like a foot or you know, those things I use today, you know, what he taught me. So
yeah, there's no question he was a great teacher. And you know, I have people to this day call me, and I'll be 2,000 miles away, I won't even see the horse, and I'll say, "Well, you know, I think it might be this or it might be that. Why don't you have your vet check it out?" And a lot of times they'll call back and go, "Man, you were so right. You didn't even see the horse." And I go, "Well, I'm just thinking of things that you know, that I know, and things that Bobby taught me," and it just kind of clicks in your head. And I'm sure you can do the same thing, because you've been on the track long time.
Yeah, you can't you know, put a price on that experience that I got with him. I mean, I'm talking about one meet. I had just my four horses, and they were getting claimed, and were claiming new ones. I won 18 races as a groom, and I had one day where I had one in the first, one in the second, and one in the fifth, and they all won, and they all got claimed. Says, "Well, we got to go get you some more horses tomorrow." So that's fun. You know, that's fun. But I really like, you know, even now with our barn, we can claim horses, and we try not to be stereotyped as, you know, certain trainers just say, "Well, they can't win on the grass," or "They can't work with young horses," or "They can't work with claimers." We try to do everything. You know, we try to have horses like fillies, or we have turf horses, and then we can claim one for eight and win for 12. I mean, we don't want anybody to say, "Well, I would give them the horse, but they're not good with that type of horse." We try to be versatile.
You know, you have two trainers that you've been around that are both in the Hall of Fame, with Jerry Hollendorfer now and with Bobby Frankel.
Mm-hmm.
But they both have completely different personalities, completely different styles. How would you describe each of them, Danny, and what makes them different, and what makes them so good?
Well, first of all, I don't pick an easy guy to work for ever. I don't know what I would do, you know, if I had like an easy guy to work for. They're difficult, but pretty much the same. Very good communicators with their owners, and they will have everybody on top of things as soon as there's a problem. you know, you gotta let them know right away. That's very important. And Bobby was not as you know, Jerry's up very early and you know, is a very hard worker, and he puts his money into his own horses. You know, he'll buy horses. He puts his money back in the game, and so did Bobby. So they're very similar like that. And, you know, they're hard workers. They don't take time off. And I think they're very similar, very similar. But I think Bobby was a little more outspoken there when he talked to the press. That's one difference. Jerry does. He's kind of low-key with the press. Bobby was a little more outspoken. Like when Marquetry was running, he says, well, we're going to the lead, and we're going to go wire to wire. The horse was 35-1, and he won. But he was a little more outspoken. Jerry's a little more low-key with the press, but very much the same. Very much the same.
Both kind of hard-working guys that were single-minded and mm-hmm. You know, just made their name claiming horses and then developed into stakes horse trainers.
Very similar. Very similar.
Talking with trainer Danny Ward Jr., assistant trainer to Hall of Famer Jerry Hollendorfer. Danny, do you have a favorite or maybe a couple of favorite Bobby Frankel stories that you always like to share with people?
Oh, yeah. quite a few. I don't know, just things that he told me, and you know, when I was starting out, and then when he sent me up to Northern California with horses, and he would tell me that he couldn't, you know, go over all the horses and whether they're going to gallop and work and everything. He just gave me a few, you know, a few tips, and he said, just whenever you think you're doing the right thing, just a little bit less. He says, just if you think you need to work 5/8, then work a half. If you think you need a half, work 3/8. He says, because a lot of the times these people, you know, a lot of the trainers, they overwork the horses and they overtrain them. We do that too. But he said, whenever you think you're doing the right thing, do a little bit less. And I've always remembered that.
Yeah, that's good advice. When was there a lot of pressure on you when you were out on your own to perform well? I mean, did you feel it internally?
Well, for with Bobby, he was very very trusting, and he left me at Hollywood during Santa Anita. He would never come over there and watch. You expected to do the job. Jerry's a little more around all the time. You know, he'll be down at Santa Anita because we have, you know, important races and horses to run. So it's not really an off track. That's the difference with Bobby. He was training at Santa Anita, running at Santa Anita. I was at Hollywood, so he wasn't over there a lot. But you know, they both give you a lot of freedom, and that makes it very rewarding because you have a say. Not really say, but they listen to your input, and you know, sometimes I can pick the races and the riders, but it better be somebody that he likes. You know what I mean? if it's not, we go over the book and everything, and we make suggestions. And can we run this horse in this race? Can we run for this price? And it's a lot of fun. You know, when the book comes out, he'll say, "Have you gone over? Have you looked at the book yet?" And we do it together, and it's a lot of fun.
Danny, you talked about coming to the racetrack and getting involved with the sport for the first time. How did you first get interested in horse racing? Where did the love of the game begin for you?
Well, I think, you know, everybody was a racing fan when first Majestic Prince in the Derbies. That was the first time I went to Santa Anita, saw him run, and then you'd watch the Derbies and of course Secretariat and Riva Ridge, and that's when I was in high school down in San Diego. I had a friend of mine that was from Arcadia, and we used to go up to the races on the weekends, like Friday after school, and then we would stay overnight and go to the races Saturday and Sunday, and we were big fans, and realized that I was too tall to be a rider and not really feasible to try to be a handicapper. So I you know, always had followed Bobby and was a big fan and read all the articles and watched what he did with the horses, and that's who I wanted to work for. And you know, I ended up working for him. It was quite, you know, when I first started, he said that, you know, you're not ready and everything. And then once I finally earned his respect, one time we had bought a horse from Bruce Headley, and who was a different groom, was on the other side, and we ran the horse, and he won. And his name was Impressive Luck. And I said, I wish I knew about that. You know, I would have bet on him. He says, I didn't think I had to tell you. I said, well, right then, you know, that made me really happy to hear that. You know, I was 18, and I said, wow, this guy must be doing all right. You know, so I just kept working on it.
Did you always want to be a trainer and involved
Absolutely.
With thoroughbred racing? Yeah?
Absolutely, yep.
Who took you to the track the first time?
My dad took me to Del Mar. You know, we grew up in San Diego, and my dad took me to Del Mar. And I liked it, but I was just really starting to follow it, you know, when all those big horses were running and really got into it. Actually, I had a friend of mine, and we had sort of like a fantasy racing way before football and baseball. We'd start out with money, and we'd claim horses and see how they did and everything. We were kind of nerds, you know, so that's what we did. I mean, I had a poster of Secretariat. I didn't have a poster of Farrah Fawcett when I was in high school. But everybody was a big fan of, and, you know, Ruffian and Secretariat. I mean, Dr. Fagg was a little before me, but I studied him and you know, I wanted to get into the business. And I was lucky enough to work for the guy that I really wanted to.
Yeah, that's very fortunate. I had a picture of Robin Smith instead of Farrah Fawcett. So I guess
that's a little better. We're Secretary, you know, in that Derby, Secretary Four goes in the poster and everything. It's a pretty nice one.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. They gave away a poster of Cougar one time at Hollywood Park, and I had that in my aunt's pool house for a long, long time. I always wondered what happened to that thing.
Yeah, I just got the one at Songbird when she ran in the Alabama. I saw people were carrying that around at the races, and then my guys brought back a bunch, so we got them framed, and it looks nice.
That's cool. That's cool. What about some of the horses when you were working for Bobby? Some of the great horses that you were around.
Well, we didn't get the top horses. Charlie got the top horses, and we had to, you know, claim horses and make them into stakes winners, which is not that easy. But the big break was with Judmont in 89 or 90. And they had six horses with Eddie Gregson, and they wanted to give us three and Ron McInally three. And Bobby didn't want to take them from Eddie because they were very, very close friends. And Eddie said, you better take them because somebody else is going to. And we got three horses, and we started to do a little bit of good, and then we got more and more and more, and it just went and snowballed from there. So that's... you know, the first one was Miser Den. He won the Cabrillo at Del Mar. And then we got Market Tree, and we got Exborn. And Exborn really was a key horse because they knew he was a good horse, but they couldn't get him sound. They said, if you can get this horse sound, then, you know, you get some more horses. And we got him good enough to win the Hollywood Turf Cup. He beat Prize, and he hit Sol Greek, and me, two Eclipse Award winners, and then we were on our way, so...
You know, we hear that a lot, Danny, in racing, where, mm-hmm. you know, you get a horse that has ability, but you just have to get them right. And you use the term get them sound. What did you have to do with Exborn to get him to where he was able to compete at those high levels?
It was just a lot of work on his legs and his feet and everything, and get him, you know, sound and train him right. You know, you couldn't train him really hard, but, you know, once we got him fit, we had a really, really nice horse. You know, just had his issues. Just took a lot of work.
Yeah, he did. Didn't he get laminitis at one point?
Yeah, he did. That's sad. You know, after he retired, but quite a horse, and that horse did a lot for us and Marquetry too. You know, because these horses were coming in after just a few starts in Europe, and they really had a lot of their career ahead of them. So it was really, really lucky. You know, to get horses like Marquetry and Juan Desta and Toussaud, and, you know, I mean, those were fantastic horses. Just took time to develop them, and they were just ready for their second careers in the United States. They had just run a couple times in Europe, and then they were just ready to run over here. You know, we were very fortunate to get those nice horses.
Yeah, tell me a little more about Marquetry, because that's a horse that, as I was coming up and getting interested in racing, he was one of the horses that I really took a liking to on the West Coast.
Yeah, he came, and he'd only had a couple starts. He was by Conquistador Cielo, and he'd only run on the turf, and he ran in, like, the Derby. You know, they come over for the Breeders' Cup, like the the Hollywood Derby and a race like that against three-year-olds. So we stopped on them in December and really wanted to, a lot of their horses, we wanted to transfer their form over to the dirt. And he was one of them that, you know, we were fortunate enough to, when we put him on the dirt, he won, you know, he won the Gold Cup and he won a big stake up at Rockingham, a $500,000 stake. So he was a big horse. He kind of fooled us when he ran up there because he was a front runner and there was a, like a speed horse in there, but he was a six furlong horse. So he went to the lead and we were off the pace, but that didn't mean he can come from off the pace because the next time we took him back, he didn't run any good at Monmouth. So kind of fooled us. I say, oh, we can come on. We can come. Oh, he showed he can come from off the pace. No, he didn't. But there were good horses running at that time, you know, Twilight Agenda and Farm Away, Best Pal, and, you know, it was good racing. They had that series. Remember that national series where we had all those races all over the country, American champions or whatever it was. And there were races all over, and I got to travel all over. So it's a good experience.
Would you like to see a series like that again in racing, Danny?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's very good. Because I like to travel. I've been to a few places this year. You know, I get to travel on occasion. I never get to go to Songbird. But if Jerry is busy at another track, then I get to go. I'm going to New York next week for the Kelso with Point Piper, the horse that won at Longacres. So it's good experience to see different tracks and different trainers and how they do things and different racing. And that's, the more places you go, the more you learn.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And the relationships that you gather along the way can be invaluable later on in your life, too. It's a lot of fun.
What are some of the favorite places, Danny, that you've had the chance to visit?
Well, anytime you win, you like it's a good trip. So this year, I like Lone Star and I like Emerald. Those are my two favorites. We won, I really like to go to Belmont because it's a lot of history, and we won quite a few races there with Bobby, and I'm going back there, and it's good racing, and it's there's a lot of history. You know, you walk around and you see the pictures of all the horses that have won races there, and it's very, very, very nice.
Yeah, it's kind of a awe before the sacred kind of feel. You go to a place like Belmont Park. I know some people feel the same way about Churchill Downs, kind of like the mecca of horse racing for a lot of people. And a lot of people feel the same way about Santa Anita, which is cool.
Yeah, Santa Anita, it's tough to beat the weather and the competition is very tough meeting. You know, that winter meet, for years and years and years, there have been people come out from the East Coast to try that meeting, the winter meeting. It's very tough. It's very tough. And we would have our horses from Judmont, and some of them would start right off winning and everything. But the horses that were a cut below, you know, during the winter meet at Santa Anita, we'd take them to Belmont, and they'd be 3-5, and they'd win first time out. So I think it's the toughest meet in the country, that winter meet at Santa Anita, in my opinion.
We're visiting with trainer Danny Ward Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short break. We'll come back and continue this visit next. Stay with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Fasig Tipton November Sale. The world's premier breeding stock event annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. In 2015, broodmares averaged 3 times more than the nearest competitor, and racing and broodmare prospects averaged 5 times more, with weanlings selling for as high as $600,000. The Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 7th in Lexington, Kentucky. Nominate today at FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. to breed the best, to race the best, and to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Songbird comes off the far turn with the advantage by four lengths. Mike Smith has not asked her for a thing. Meanwhile, John Velasquez getting after Rachel's Valentina, begging her to wake up and respond. Nickname is in third, and Songbird is just rolling past the eighth pole. Has the lead by six. Rachel's Valentina is in second. But there is absolutely no stopping Songbird. It is all Songbird. Mike Smith aboard, crushing the field. Rachel's Valentina was home second. Dothraki Queen made a late run to third. And then Nickname was fourth. 1 minute, 42 and 3/5 seconds.
Our very own Kurt Becker with the call of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies at Keeneland last year. And boy, Songbird brilliant as she has been each and every one of her career starts. And she, of course, trained by Hall of Famer Bobby Frankel. We are visiting with, or Hall of Famer Jerry Hollendorfer, excuse me. And we are visiting with Jerry's assistant, Danny Ward Jr. on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. And we do want to welcome everybody back to the program. And don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows every single week on our website and on iTunes. Yes, I'm sure that Bobby Frankel would have loved to have trained Songbird.
No question.
But he does not. Jerry
got the
does.
Next best thing.
Yeah. And hey, Danny, and I know, you know, listening to that call of the Breeders' Cup had to bring back some very fond memories for you. But I know that this is a very, very special filly, and you've been privileged to be around her for the her entire career.
Yeah, remember when she came in, and, you know, apart from the, you know, she's very, very classy. And the beautiful action, the thing that sets her apart is how smart she is, because, you know, when you run, you don't have to worry about her losing the race before the race. I mean, I'll give you an example. We had a big workout prior to one of the races this year, and she got out to the track and jogged all the way the wrong way of the racetrack back to the eighth pole, and then that's how we work when we start them off. And there was a loose horse, and the rider got hurt. She just stood there, and the horse ran by her. The ambulance went by. She just stood there like an outrider, with the rider with his feet out of the stirrups and everything. It's just when you have that, you know, temperament, you really have a chance. You know, you got a good chance. If you're worried about shipping and being nervous, or you know, the horse losing the race before the race, I mean, that makes it difficult. But when you got a horse that's as smart as her, you know, it makes it a lot easier.
Talk about shipping a horse of that quality around like you guys do, and is there anything special that you do, or what's that procedure like? I think a lot of people would be interested in that.
You know, they like it or they don't. You know, blind luck. A lot of people were saying at parks that Songbird, you know, the only thing that gets beat is all the shipping. I mean, all the shipping. Okay, blind luck went from the fantasy back to Santa Anita. She went from the Kentucky Oaks back to Hollywood Park. She went for the Delaware Oaks back to Hollywood. She went for the Alabama back to Del Mar. She went for the Cotillion back to Del Mar. She went to the Breeders' Cup and back. So that's a lot of shipping. Songbird made one trip to Saratoga, stayed there for a month, back to Del Mar, and then we flew. So if they like it, like blind luck, when the van would come, she'd practically run up the ramp. You know, she loved it. Songbird is the same. She, you know, the other horses will balk when they get to the van, and she just walks right up like nothing, just goes and stands. And, you know, she just makes it easier on herself, because, you know, horses, they get on there and they paw, and they, you know, they're agitated and everything, but she's just calm and very classy. So it makes it easy.
How long did it take you to know that she had this kind of talent, Danny?
Well, you're hopeful when you see the horses in the morning, and you try to take them and train them, you know, two, three at a time together, and you get them behind horses and in front and in between and everything. You give them as much experience as you can, and then see how they are, you know, going in the gate, and standing and then coming out and then, you know, galloping out and then breaking everything you do, everything you can. But you really don't know until you get over to the paddock, because we've had some horses that we really liked, and then when they get over the paddock, they just lose it, because, you know, you can never tell, and some of them will be really good in the paddock, and then they get really nervous going to the gate. So you don't really know until that first start, and she happened to be in a big field, and she was on the rail, and there were quite a few horses that were acting up next to her as she just stood there. I like her, but I like her even more now. You know, she was on the rail, and that didn't bother her, so... Right then, so that's really special.
Well, she's now a perfect 11-for-11, and every win seems to be by open lengths. Jude made the comment this past week that you look at her past performances, and it's very ruffian-like. Would you agree?
I agree. You know, she's getting, you know, more to do. You know, ruffian was really, really spectacular. But the important thing, I think, this last race showed was that she was very relaxed, you know, and Mike said that that she relaxed for him, and he could have put her anywhere. And I've seen that in the morning. I've seen her work behind horses, but, you know, we haven't seen that during the races. And this time he had her so relaxed, you know, which is going to help her in the future. And he said he just moved a little bit, and then she just went right up to the lead. So if she can keep learning and maturing and, you know, actually drop the bridle the first part and put her anywhere you want and relax the first part, she's going to be even better.
The day that you guys kind of intimated, I you probably talked about it with Jerry at length, but he talked about rating her that one time at Santa Anita where she laid second. And my first impression when I watched the race is she's actually – better from off the pace. And this race didn't do anything to dispel that. Now I know the story you told about marquetry probably gives you a little bit of the creeps, but
exactly. Yeah, but I'd never seen marquetry do it in the morning, but I've seen her, you know, and we entered in a race, and there were a few trainers that had two or three horses in the race, and they were talking about, well, we're going to kill her off and stuff like that. And, you know, they're trying to win too. You know, you can't complain about that. But what we did was we worked her behind two other horses, and she started out about 10 lengths behind, and she just went right in between them like nothing. So I was not worried. And Mike said the second race in the Del Mar Debutante, she did sit a little bit off the pace. And I said, she can sit too. And he says, she's better sitting off it. So, but she just goes because she goes, you know. She just goes to the lead because it's easy for her.
Danny, is there more or maybe less pressure? I know that she does her own thing and she's so good, but is there more pressure when you lead over a horse that's this good and is undefeated at this point in her career?
It's good pressure. You know, the guy who really handled it the best probably was John Sheriffs. I mean, that was a lot more than we've seen so far, because those people were fanatics. But, you know, you want to stay unbeaten. That's the difference. I mean, there's good horses and everything, but once they get beat, then, you know, they kind of lose that mystique. But there's pressure. It's kind of a relief, you know, when she wins, but she's so much fun to watch. It's a good kind of pressure. The pressure's on the other people trying to run with her.
Why do you think the emphasis now is always on winning? In the old days, it seemed like horses – you know, people would be fans of horses, whether they won or lost. But now, every time a horse gets beat, they jump ship. What do you think that's about?
Well, there's more media. There's social media, and there's people that are, you know, no matter what a horse does, they're going to try and knock him and say she hasn't run against anybody or she didn't run a fast last quarter. There's more of that. People were probably always thinking that, but now you just see it. You see it out there all the time.
Yeah, I think that's like that in sports too, right? You can have a great sports team, and all of a sudden they suffer one loss, and everybody jumps off the bandwagon.
Yeah,
because everybody sees it. You know that they didn't see everything before. I mean, you couldn't get all the races before, but now everybody sees everything. I mean, you can't do anything without somebody seeing you. And it used to be, you could take horses out in the morning, and you know, nobody would know who they were. You know, now there's people watching every move you make and trying to watch what you're doing and sell the information to gamblers and everything. It's just, there's a lot more eyes on you nowadays.
Yeah, videos off of phones and all of that stuff.
I know.
Yeah. Danny Ward Jr., our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Danny, you mentioned names like Songbird, who we just talked about, and Blind Luck, who herself was absolutely brilliant. How about some of the other horses that you've been around with Jerry that have really kind of captured your heart?
You know, I had tried on Facebook to make like a top 10 of you know, Jerry and Bobby together. I couldn't do it in just 10. You know, I mean, there's just so many. You know, for Jerry, we when I first started, we had Heatseeker, and he won the big cap, and then we had Blind Luck, and we had Dakota Phone, won the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and we had Tuscan Evening, who came from Europe 0-11, and she won 12 out of 16, you know, 9 stakes. And, you know, it just seems like Shared Belief, of course, you know, he was fantastic. Just seems like every year we get, you know, we get one of those horses that kind of, you know, brings everybody up. If you're down, you can always, well, we're running Shared Belief this week, and it just picks everybody up, you know. So.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Shared Belief, because I had the privilege this past January of being down at Gulfstream Park and as one of the MCs and moderators of the Owner View panel. And at that particular conference, Jim Rome was the keynote speaker, and he gave a very emotional speech about Shared Belief and what it was like to be involved with him, and of course everything that happened, you know, toward the end of his life. And I can only imagine that for the trainer, you become so attached to these great horses and all your horses, really, that has to be extremely difficult for you when something like that happens too.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, not fair to say, but you do get attached to all the horses. But it seems like when something like that happens, it's always a really good horse, you know, for some reason. That doesn't happen to the, you know, May the 20s. But it's just, it can happen so fast, you know. The horse was in Northern California, and Jerry was lying down. He told me that he got colic, and he was on his way to the clinic and everything. And the next call that he got, he says the thing is not going to make it. It was just, it was so fast, you know, it was so fast. So you don't even believe that it's happening when it's happening, but then it's, you know, it's hard to get over.
How difficult can it be for a barn to get past it, and how do you do that?
I mean, that's the way we started the year, you know, that we had him, you know, just about ready to breathe and get ready for a big year. And, you know, we lost him and you know, we had to bounce back because, you know, they don't come along like that. You know, that horse, the first time we ran him, I mean, you could see something because he ran in that Hollywood preview and the way he opened up on those horses, you know, usually when a horse wins by 10 or 12, you look back and everybody's floundering, but they were running. They were moving at him like they were Kobe's back, and they were running at him like they were going to get him, and he just put 10 lengths on him like nothing. You could tell that there was really something there. So it was really, really exciting watching that horse run. He was a really neat horse to be around. You know, very sad. But, you know, Jim was where he really got into it, and, you know, the first time we ran him and that he was an owner, you know, he was – he's a great, great fan. You know, he really loves the racing. He loves the horses too. So, that was a tough one.
What about some horses that you used to take care of? Or you said you won 18 races in one Hollywood. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's fantastic. What about some of those older horses, the claiming horses, the cheaper horses that people don't know? But talk about a couple of those that you know, you did some exceptional work on or just were your personal favorites.
Those, you know, those claiming races, they're the backbone of the, you know, you have a big weekend like this weekend where every race is a big race. But, you know, the majority of the time, it's at least 50-60% of the races are claiming races. So those horses really can really get attached to them. Like I had a horse named Golden Doc Ray, and he was 10. He was a 10-year-old, and I won like 15 races with him as a groom. And they wouldn't claim him because he was 10. But, you know, you really get attached to them because they run more often because they're, you know, the big horses will run once a month. These type of horses are trying just as hard as the big horses, but I don't know, Swing the Harbor was a nice horse. I had, he won like about 8 races with him. And you know, you do, people say you're not supposed to get attached to him, but you do. You do, especially when we claim a new horse. I really like getting a new horse to work with and try to get him happy and see them start to do good and look better. You know, their coast looks better and they're going sounder and they look happier and everything. You know they're going to run good. You know, that's the key. And when you're a groom, you can really give them the personal attention, especially if you have 4 horses. I mean, that's what you're working with, and you know, you really spoil them. And you see the relationship, you know, the groom and the horse and everything, they love their horses. You know, the guy that took care of Share Belief, he loved the horse, and the horse loves him too. That's what it's all about. So,
Danny, you brought up the fact that there's a big weekend at Santa Anita this coming weekend. Of course, Saturday, opening weekend, is Breeders' Cup Preview Day, and we'll get a look at some of the top contenders for the Breeders' Cup making their final prep race before they go in those championship days. But you have a horse by the name of Terra's Tango, who is a 4-year-old filly that's going to run in the Zenyatta for yourself and Jerry Hollendorfer. And she's very, very talented. She's won 5 starts, comes out of a big win in the Rancho Bernando Handicap at Del Mar back on August 17th. Now, you have to tackle Beholder and Stellar Wind in that race. So it's kind of the opposite of when you send out Songbird and you're the 1-9 favorite. Now you're going to be a little bit of a longer price and you're tackling a couple of the monsters in that division. What's the approach going into a race like that for a trainer?
Well, we nominated to the Zenyatta, we nominated to the Spencer, which is also under consideration. That's next week at Keeneland, which is 500,000. But I think that the owners really want to do the best thing to get her to the Breeders' Cup, whether it's the Distaff or the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint. So they're going to decide if it's best to keep her here and run in the Zenyatta or go to Keeneland for the Spinster, which is more money. And I would say it's an easier field just because Beholder and Stellar Wind are here. So I'm not knocking any horses there, but this is a tough race here. But I think there's advantages either way, because the Spinster is a very prestigious race. They would like to win it, but this race, you know, you stay here, and she really likes this track. Her last 2 races on this track, she won Graded Stakes. So they could decide to go in the Distaff, depending on how she runs here, or the Sprint. They have another filly in the Distaff named Cavorting. So it's all up to them, you know, Stone Street, whether they want to run here or in Keeneland. It's up to them. But we nominated to both, and we entered today, and they're going to take a look.
Talk a little bit about that interaction that you have with the owners and how that dynamic of this sport and this profession actually works.
Well, you know, it's very important to let them know anything that's happening when it happens, you know, because you don't want them to hear from somebody else, you know, hey, your horse got loose on the track today and got hurt, or this horse hasn't worked for a while. I mean, it's very important to let them know everything that's happening and, you know, let them be involved and, you know, which race would you like to run in? And, you know, they're breeders and they have very good horses and, you know, they love their horses. So, you know, if they want the best thing for the horses. So they're very patient, you know, Stone Street and Fox Hill. They say that if you feel like he's not ready to run any horse or if they need time, then we give him time. They're very, very, very good. And they always put the horse first. So that makes it easy.
Yeah, that's always important, and you know, a lot of it has to do with how you educate the owners too. If you once you get somebody to give you a horse, if you speak to them that way and teach them about the game, it makes it a lot easier.
Oh, definitely. And they know they have very, very good operations. They have their farms that Stone Street have are just immaculate, you know, beautiful places. So they're first class operation, and we're very fortunate to have some good horses for them. And, we've got, you know, Terra's Tango and Cyrus Alexander won a stake over at Parks last week, so we've been lucky to win, you know, 4 or 5 stakes for them this year. So they're very, very important for the business. The business needs more people like that.
Danny Ward Jr. on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, now working with Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer. And as you can hear in this conversation, it is a very good time to be working with Jerry Hollendorfer, just as it was when Danny was working with Hall of Famer Bobby Frankel. Danny, how about the future for you? Do you ever see a point when you might say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll give this a go on my own again.
Well, one thing Bobby told me, he said, there was a point where I was on the road and I really was thinking about going out on my own. And he says, okay, let me tell you one thing. He says, when you go out and you get those people, when you hustle those owners, you have to do what they want. But when they come to you, then you can do what you want. That's what he told me. So hopefully I would like to do that in the future. But I always remember the things that he tells me. You know, he says, if you go out and get somebody, you got to do what they want. And he said, but if they come to you, you can do what you want. So that's I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, he always had those little homespun little comments that he used to make. One that I loved, we were standing out at the quarter pole one day, you know, where he used to stand there at the gap. And and we're sitting there and some birds come down and they start picking the oats out of the manure, right? And he turns to me and he says, it's their porridge.
I mean he
had these thoughts, you know, and everybody, Brooklyn Bobby and all that stuff, but he inside, he was a very simple guy. He was an animal person, you know. He loved his dogs.
He loved
his horses, you know. And he even was thinking about the birds, you know, pecking you know, oats out. It's crazy.
Can really get the wrong impression if you're just going on your first impression, because sometimes in the morning, say 7, 8 o'clock, you might come up to him and want to talk to him, and he's in a bad mood, but you don't know if the horse just got hurt or something like that. And you get a lot of anxiety around the barn in the morning, but if you get him in the afternoon, I thought when he was at home relaxing, he was always very nice. You know, some people can just get off on the wrong foot and talk to themselves, oh, that guy's a jerk, but you don't know what's happening. You know, I mean, a horse could have just got hurt. You know, I called from Hollywood one time, and I go, man, it's a bad month. So I said, yeah, but the horse just, you know, started coughing, the one that's in tomorrow. I mean, you don't know. You know, there's a lot of pressure on the trainers, you know, every day. So you got to allow for that.
Yeah, well, it is a high-pressure job, and especially with the big horses, like you're used to being around the two men that you work for.
Boy, anything can happen, I'll tell you. And when you're out and you're watching 50 horses, and the one horse that gets loose is always the one that's in. You know what I mean? Always. Right? Say, who got loose? Oh, it's in tomorrow. You know, it's always something like that. Anything can happen.
Yeah, it's always the horse that's in the sale that jumps over the fence, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got to be ready for anything. So.
Well, Danny, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about a horse that you have in your care that I actually have a little piece of, and that's a horse by the name of Budokan, who I believe you're entering today for those races on Saturday. Of course, still a ways behind Shared Belief and those types of horses in terms of stature. He's looking to break his maiden on Saturday, but can we go to the windows?
Tell you what, I've had two guys work the horse a month apart, and they don't ever even talk to each other, and both of them said, Mike Smith worked him, and he said, boy, you got to get this horse in the grass. And the month later, I had Norberto Arroyo worked him. He said, it's a grass horse. And every time I look up, I see Hardspun winning on the grass. And he's definitely the bottom for turf and the top for turf. And we got him on the turf, and they split the race. So we'll just see, you know, if we get a good draw and everything. But he's training great. He doesn't want to sprint. He's run fifth and fourth, and he's going to get to do what he wants to do.
Well, that sounds good. Looks like we better bring money.
Bring money, yeah. There's no limit how much money you can spend.
Well, Danny, if I'm not mistaken, you do some social media activity too, where you'll send out tweets about some of the horses in the barn and things like that. How important is social media now in terms of engaging the owners and keeping people informed of what's going on in your barn?
Oh, if you use it the right way, and I'm pretty you know, there's more pictures of horses than anything else, and not really trying to be controversial, just read repost, you know, articles that I see about the horses. And if there's anybody that's interested that contacts me and asks how the horses are doing, I try to keep them up to date. Just stuff like that. It's important to get new fans, and anything we can do, we should do it.
Yeah, you do a great job, and actually, that's how you ended up on this show. You posted something about Songbird, and I go, we got to get Danny on that show, and that's when I reached out to you. So it's cool. It's a good thing.
Oh, it's a very good thing. You know, I mean, some people do the you know, they want to knock, and they don't have to worry about ever seeing anybody, and they can just say anything they want. But you know, once you learn, it's really can be really positive.
In the beginning of the program, Danny, you mentioned that this was all you ever wanted to do, was to be around horses and be a horse trainer. But when you are away from the track, what are some other things that you enjoy doing when you get a little time away?
A little time away.
You notice I said a little time away.
Okay. A little time. Right now, I have to go get supplies for the barn. And then I'll be back at the barn, and we're going to work, you know, all day till about 4. And then I'll go home, and I get up really early, like about 2:15, to go to the barn. And in Del Mar, it's even earlier, and you get done even later. So there isn't a lot of time. And you know, I get it Mondays when I get done at 9 or 10, I get the rest of the afternoon off. And I don't even really like that because, you know, anything can happen, and I'm calling my foreman and everything. And I don't know. It just, if you're around, you know, if you're around the horses and something happens, then you're okay, but you certainly wouldn't want anything to happen, you know, when you're not there. So I don't know. I don't really want a whole day off, to be honest. And I don't, you know, when I go on the road, it's you know, with one or two horses and everything, but I'm doing the list and the set list and the days off and the payroll and with tomorrow's list and entering and everything. So it's not really like you're away with one horse, because I have to do the same thing I do every day. So I don't know. I really enjoy it.
Well, that's what it is. It's a lifestyle for most people, and that's, you gotta love it, or you drive yourself crazy.
No, you can't do it unless you love it. And I get to spend time with my family in during Del Mar, because I grew up in San Diego, so I get to stay with mom and dad there, and they really like it, and they get their overnights and the programs and everything, and always sunny on TV and everything. So it's really really fun during the summer.
Well, Danny, we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us here on Trainer Talk tonight. Really do appreciate the visit. We'll look forward to seeing you this weekend, and all the best moving forward with that Hollendorfer barn.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, Danny Ward Jr. here on Trainer Talk, and wow, great stuff.
Yeah, it was a fun show. Glad we did it.
Chance to work with two legends. Pretty special. That'll do it for us. We're back next week with an all-new edition of Trainer Talk. Don't forget to check out our website for the podcast of this program, and you can also hear it on iTunes by searching Horse Racing Radio Network. For our producer, Lee Della Pena, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk.